Hello, good evening. I am happy to be here with you today. This morning I was in Los Angeles at the Cesar Chavez March to commemorate Cesar's life and to dedicate all of us once again to Cesar's values. And it is wonderful to be here tonight at the Cesar Chavez Library, except we are outside when you all should be inside. We are in the streets trying to tell people that they may not close the libraries when the libraries are closing. This makes no sense in a society that wants to be better, that wants to live up to the dreams and the aspirations that Cesar Chavez and Martin Luther King Jr. and John Kennedy and Robert Kennedy and Eleanor Roosevelt and so many Americans have said represent the best that is in us. And yet, when those words and those speeches and those ideals are characterized on paper in places like this building and made available to people who might not otherwise have a chance to access them, it makes no sense to be shut out. It makes no sense to have libraries closed. It makes no sense to have books unavailable to people. I want to share some words that I have collected over time because they mean something to me, and they are words from some people you know, some people you may have heard of, and some you may not know. You know Cesar. Cesar Chavez said that once social change begins, it cannot be reversed. You cannot uneducate the person who has learned to read. You cannot humiliate the person who feels pride. You cannot oppress the people who are not afraid anymore. Those of you who are here tonight indicate that you are not afraid. And it is in honor of the values that Caesar's life indicated that you stand here today and you do honor to him as he did honor to all of us. John Steinbeck, who some of you know of, we drove by the John Steinbeck Museum when we were on our way into the city. And I wonder then how it is that the people in this city can justify closing the libraries in a city known in large part for a man who was a man of letters, a man who with his talent was able to characterize and depict the beauty and the dilemma of the human being trying to find her way and his way in this life. Steinbeck wrote in Sweet Thursday, "Where does discontent start? You are warm enough, but you shiver. You are fed, yet hunger gnaws you. You have been loved, but your yearning wanders in new fields. And to prod all these, there's time, the bastard time. The end of life is now not so terribly far away. You can see the finish line when you come into the stretch, and your mind says, have I worked enough? Have I eaten enough? Have I loved enough? All of these, of course, are the foundation of man's greatest curse and perhaps his greatest glory. What has my life meant so far, and what can it mean in the time left to me? And now we're coming to the wicked poison dart. What have I contributed to the great ledger? What am I worth? And this isn't vanity or ambition. Men seem to be born with a debt they can never pay, no matter how hard they try. It piles up ahead of them. Man owes something to man. If he ignores the debt, it poisons him. And if he tries to make payments, the debt only increases. And the quality of his gift is the measure of the man." I think Steinbeck put it well, as he put everything well, but it's a question we must always ask. What has my life meant so far, and what can it mean in the time left to me? What have I contributed to the great ledger? And then there is, many of you know the name Ossie Davis. Ossie Davis was a friend of mine, a wonderful, decent, far-thinking, talented, huge man. Ossie died a short time ago, and in dying he left a great hole in the universe. And some friends of his got together and they spoke about Ossie and the contribution his life made to their lives and to all of our lives. And I want to tell you about something that the poet Maya Angelou said about Ossie Davis. She said, when he died, the heaviest door in the universe slammed shut, and there were no knobs. The season of grief fell all around us like the leaves of autumn. When great trees fall, rocks on distant hills shudder. Lions hunker down in tall grasses, and even elephants lumber after safety. When great trees fall in forests, small things recoil into silence. Their senses are eroded beyond fear. When great souls die, the air around us becomes sterile, light rare. We breathe briefly. Our eyes briefly see with a hurtful clarity. Our memory, suddenly sharpened, examines, gnaws on kind words unsaid, on promised walks not taken. Great souls die, and our reality bound to them takes leave of us. Our souls, dependent upon them, upon their nature, upon their nurture, now shrink, wizened. Our minds, formed and informed by their radiance, seems to fall away. We are not so much maddened as reduced to the unutterable silence of dark, cold caves. And then our memory comes to us again in the form of a spirit, and it is the spirit of our beloved. It appears draped in the wisdom of Du Bois, furnished in the humor and grace of Paul Laurence Dunbar. We hear the insight of Frederick Douglass and the boldness of Marcus Garvey. We see our beloved standing before us as a light, as a beacon, indeed, as a way. We are not so much reduced. Suddenly the peace blooms around us. It is strange. It blooms slowly, always irregularly. Space is filled with a kind of soothing electric vibration. We see the spirit, and we know our senses. We change, resolved never to be the same. They whisper to us from the spirit, remember, he existed. He existed. He belonged to us. He exists in us. We can be and be more every day, more, larger, kinder, truer, more honest, more courageous, and more loving, because Ossie Davis existed and belonged to all of us. There's a book in the library that you can't go into, written by a man by the name of Bain Kerr. The book is entitled Harmful Intent, and it's a novel. It's a novel about the law, and it's a wonderful, wonderful read, a story that catches you and takes you along with it, with the story. But in part of it, he says a wonderful thing. He says, in cynical times, right and wrong can be hard to sort out. We are in cynical times today, when they can close a library and think that that is a good thing. We are in cynical times. He says, in cynical times, right and wrong can be hard to sort out. Goodness and truth can seem beyond our reach, but we have the option, the obligation, to put cynicism aside and exercise the public virtues, to find truth, oppose wrong, protect innocence, promote good, and do right. A man named Antoine de Saint-Exupéry wrote a book called The Airman's Odyssey. De Saint-Exupéry was a Frenchman, thank you. And in his book, The Airman's Odyssey, he says, among other things, here I touch the inescapable contradiction I shall never be able to resolve. For man's greatness does not reside merely in the destiny of the species. Each individual is an empire. When a mine caves in and closes over the head of a single miner, the life of the community is suspended. His comrades, their women, their children gather in anguish at the entrance to the mine, while below them the rescue party scratch with their picks at the bowels of the earth. What are they after? Are they consciously saving one unit of society? Are they freeing a human being as one might free a horse after completing the work he is still capable of doing? 10 other miners may be killed in an attempted rescue. What inept cost accounting. Of course, it's not a matter of saving one ant out of the colony of ants. They are rescuing a consciousness, an empire whose significance is incommensurable with anything else. Inside the narrow skull of the miner, pinned beneath the fallen timber, there lives a world. Parents, friends, a home, the hot soup of evenings, songs sung on feast days, loving kindness and anger, perhaps even a social consciousness and a great universal love inhabit that skull. But what are we to measure the value of a man? His ancestor once drew a reindeer on the wall of a cave, and 200,000 years later, that gesture still radiates. It stirs us, prolongs itself in us. Man's gestures are an eternal spring. Though we die for it, we shall bring up the miner from his shaft. Solitary he may be, universal he surely is. Or Justice Thurgood Marshall, a Supreme Court justice in the United States, said, "I wish I could say that racism and prejudice are only distant memories, and that liberty and equality were just around the bend. I wish I could say that America has come to appreciate diversity and to see and accept similarity. But as I look around, I see not a nation of unity, but of division. African American and white, indigenous and immigrant, rich and poor, educated and illiterate. Look around. Can't you see the tensions in Watts? Can't you feel the fear in Scarsdale? Can't you sense the alienation in Simi Valley, the despair in the South Bronx, the rage in Brooklyn? We cannot play ostrich. Democracy cannot flourish among fear. Liberty cannot bloom among hate. Justice cannot take root amid rage. We must go against the prevailing wind. We must dissent from the indifference. We must dissent from the apathy. We must dissent from a government that has left its young without jobs, education, or hope. We must dissent from the poverty of vision and an absence of leadership. We must dissent because America can do better. Because America has no choice but to do better. Take a chance, won't you? Knock down the fences that divide. Tear apart the walls that imprison. Reach out. Freedom lies just on the other side." Good night. Thank you.